extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
From New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time. I'm Andrew Wiebe with my partner in soccer. Kalen Carr is here. He's back. We are overjoyed about that. A big show coming up. The best thing we saw from UEFA Champions League to the Open Cup to Canadian Championship and even a personal snapshot from the Kalen Carr Childhood Library. Plus, all the news you might have missed. Drama in Montreal, by the way, Inter Miami there this weekend. And Kalen is on the call. We'll talk through that matchup. Plus, some reports out there about player movement, big time player movement. Enzo Copetti, is he on his way out of Charlotte and headed back to Argentina? We will discuss that. Plus, St. Louis City's preliminary interest in Borussia Dortmund legend Marco Reus. And we'll update the Golden Boot draft and draft every single rivalry from Rivalry Week, presented by Continental, our friends from back in the day. So stay tuned to that. Kalen gets the first pick because you're both a guest, but also a piece of our history and our heart. Kalen, welcome back, man.
Yay, good to be here. Thanks for having me back, man. It's been a minute. I feel like we're ships passing in the night. You're on the weekend coverage. I'm midweek. I'm on the road. I never see you anymore. So this is, I'll have to take what I can get here.
Yeah, I'm going to ensure that I'm going to be there on a Wednesday after this is MLS filming for a couple of cold ones, perhaps a brown beverage as well with the boys. But yeah, we missed you, man, but it's good to have you back. Let's jump you straight into familiar territory. What's the best thing you saw this week? Gather from literally anywhere.
So right after, this is perfect transition, which I should never doubt you, man. You always hit it. But after this is MLS taping on Wednesday, I went with Matt Doyle to a local pub to watch the second half of the Champions League match. And I saw pretty much right after I sat down, Alphonso Davies with just an insane goal against Real Madrid. Of course, that ended up, you know, going into chaos late in the match.
That joy was so short term. I mean, I was like, oh my God, Alphonso Davies is going to beat Real Madrid, the team he's constantly linked with. MLS stand up, Canadian national team stand Madrid scored.
I know, right? And doesn't it always go in the way of Real Madrid? They're like, oh yeah, we get the player that we want, but he doesn't actually kill us in the tournament. So yeah, I mean, insane goal though. And just to see, it's still surreal to me just to have watched him coming up as a, you know, 16, 17 year old in MLS and then now see where he is and where he's still going. I remember there were thoughts and ideas around, well, is Bayern Munich too big of a club for him? And then now it's like he's playing in the Champions League semifinal against Real Madrid and being like, I don't know if Bayern Munich can keep him. Like, it just, right. His talent is too great for their for them to be able to hold on to him. So the dream run for him is just insane. I do want to add one more, though, because I'm going back and we need
hit a list for me.
Duality. Yeah, you know, you're ready for that. But I'm going back to Alphonso Davies and his time at Vancouver. Have to give a shout out to Kai Kamara, who got his first goal for LAFC in the US Open Cup against Las Vegas Lights. Of course, those two were teammates. He was a mentor of Fonzie in Vancouver, but to see Kai back in MLS, getting his first goal for the club back in Los Angeles. Yes, it was, I guess it was against Las Vegas Lights, but still, we're waiting on that one, that next big goal in MLS to track down Landon, but still great to see Kai always hitting the back of the net.
I feel like that is a prime the pump moment, you hope. Because Kai's had all of these moments and opportunities and chances, and every time I watch him, I'm just hoping and praying that he gets the goal he needs.
Yeah.
Like that this doesn't end without that happening. Like, please God, just give him one, ideally two, for Kai's sake. You know, Landon's legacy is clear. I think Kai's is very clear as well. But how much would it mean to him to get there? And I say that with the context of making fun of Sasha Kleshin every single week. Anytime the number 99 comes up, I'm like, oh yeah, yeah, that's you, right, Sasha? That's like your core. But we hope for Kai that he gets that that next goal. And Vancouver, by the way, to connect all those things, in LA this weekend, 10:30 p.m. Eastern. We have two really good West Coast games on Saturday night on MLS Season Pass. The Galaxy hosting Salt Lake and LFC hosting Vancouver. We'll talk about those perhaps here in just a little bit. My best thing, the Andrew Stan Club stand up. We're delighted by Andrew Thomas's heroics and PKs at Starfire. Nothing like a dramatic Open Cup match for the Sounders at that particular facility. Andrew Thomas, I think three saves in the PK shootout to knock off Louisville City, and the Sounders go marching on. But loved his reaction, sprinting down the field. Looked like he was talking some mess, which is what you want to see from your goalkeepers. Like, I don't want to see a guy just kind of like ho-hum shrug. I want full, like, Emmy Martinez, like, come get me, bro. Like, you don't got this. So congratulations to the entire crop of Andrews throughout the world on that one. Manuel Arteaga, you may not know that name, but I do now. The winner for the Rowdies in a 6-4 victory against Birmingham. This is perfect U.S. Open Cup, just completely off the rails. And the Rowdies get the winner from, like, a bicycle kick in a 6-4 game. I wish I could have been there. One of my biggest regrets of the entire year is not making it to Al Lang when I was in Tampa. And some other news, MLS teams that did get knocked out. Detroit City knocked off the Houston Dynamo, defending champions.
Weeby.
Yeah.
I got to throw this in here. Can you see this?
Oh, wow. That's a championship ring.
Open Cup. Chicago Fire.
True tradition, baby.
Had to bust it out for you here.
Oh, man. Fire fans are like, can we just get somewhere close to ever competing for something of that nature ever again? Perhaps soon. Perhaps soon. And then RSL lost in New Mexico. So those are the two MLS teams out. Everybody else advanced on that side. More Open Cup coming later. But I also want to add this one because Kevin Sullivan finally got his moment in the sun with the official deal done with the Philadelphia Union, the 14-year-old, signing his contract, sticking with his brother, commuting from home. It should be delightful. But we saw his bleached hair in the Extra Time group chat. And yeah, I was like, this kid, he has the swag through the roof. You have the diamond choker that he's wearing. Like, it's a very nice suit. The open, you know, he's got a couple buttons open. He's just got more confidence than anybody I'd ever seen in my life at that age. And then Kalen sent to the group chat a Slim Shady-esque picture from, we're going to say, the late 90s of a mass hair bleaching. And Kalen, you are doing your best Kevin Sullivan. So I'm sorry, but we might have to tweet that out.
Yeah, Tom Bogert was like, I feel like this could be Kalen when he was younger. And I was like, hold on a second. I've got the photo for this. But yeah, no, I mean, really cool for Kevin. And I think amazing for Philadelphia. I saw him play at MLS Next Fest in Coachella. This was probably a year and a half ago. He was playing up, of course, I think like two age groups and was by far and away the best on the field. He just looked so comfortable the way he was rolling guys, one twos, just the ball is glued to his feet. So he just jumped off the page. There was also just so much talk about him. Dortmund scouts were there along with pretty much every major club in the world watching. So extra hype for a player that young to be, you know, I'm sure aware of who's there watching and the conversations around it. But I think Philadelphia Union have done a fantastic job of, I mean, really, and his family as well, because it's a family affair with his connection to the club, his brother, of course, playing with Quinn playing and having a breakout season himself. So the fact that they are developing talent like this coming from their academy and the fact that he signed with them to be there to develop his game and to really push forward in the into the first team when he gets there is amazing. And I think, you know, just the excitement around him is not just hype. It's for real. Like he really has that talent, that ability. Of course, he's still 14 years old, so you have to be careful. But I think the way the club that he's at, the way Philadelphia has proven to be able to responsibly develop young players and to push them forward is really exciting to see. So congrats to Jim Curtin and the whole club and Kevin, most importantly, for getting this done.
I think those connections that you mentioned are so important, and it's the reason why not just the Sullivan family, but also Manchester City, who he will move to, I believe, when he turns 18, basically, and the report's for about $5 million. I mean, there's just trust. Like, I didn't realize it, and shout out to Jonathan Tannenwald, the Philadelphia Inquirer, did an amazing write-up on this, as you knew he would, given the level of news that it is in Philadelphia in his stomping grounds. I didn't realize that, for one, Kevin and Quinn's father, and by the way, there are two other sons that are in the academy too, is a history teacher at YSC, at the school connected to the academy where all these kids trying to make it are also getting their education. Like, that part's crazy. Oh, and not only that, he was the assistant coach at Villanova, and I think his dad was the head coach when Jim Curtin played there. Yep. So you just have all these folds of experience and of trust and of understanding, hey, best interests at heart, we have them for you. And we're just trying to help you along this path. Actually, Kevin and Quinn's dad said, I think his name's Brendan, that they didn't know if the deal was going to get done until Jim called him and said, hey, let's figure this out. And from there, it had traction. And that tells you the presence that, that Jim Curtin has, not just in the club, which is massive, and his presence goes from the academy on up, because remember, that's where he started, but also, you know, just in the city itself. So, hey, congratulations to the Union. It's going to be a joy to watch Kevin Sullivan develop. He's already a special player. We'll see how far he can go. All right, let's get into your weekend, man.
Let's do it.
So, going to Montreal, but this time so is Inter Miami and Lionel Messi. Are you going to stop in Big Japan? I think David Goss still has a bottle there that you might be able to get a drink off of.
I'm expecting to run into Goss somewhere up there.
The memory of, the ghost of, the legacy of, whatever it is. I was just on a podcast in this morning, actually, in Canada, and they said you were on it recently, Footy Prime. And they said I was second to Kalen Carr. So it might be a similar experience to you going up there in David Goss's homeland. Do you feel more pressure doing a Inter Miami and Lionel Messi game?
No, I did. I did this match at the same time, about similar time last year. It was Inter Miami away at Montreal. So, what's the difference?
Yeah, there you go. That is, did I don't did Messi play in that match?
No, he did not. He was, I think, in Paris playing in Champions League at the time. But no, I mean, look, it's excitement for me. I think the, of course, that you understand the idea of, you know, who Lionel Messi is, and I think all of us just covering the league feel an extra sense of, you know, a heightened experience, joy, awe, surrealness. I don't know how you would like describe it really, but it's fantastic. But I also think on the other side of it, Montreal is one of the more interesting teams for me this year. Laurent Courtois has been, for me, really, really interesting. There was a really great feature that, if people haven't read, on MLSsoccer.com by Charlie Bum this week, that went deep into who he is as a manager and his mentality, his humbleness. I think he called him the humble one. So I've gotten to speak with him a couple times this season, did one of their matches already in Chicago, which was insane. The 4-3 wind goal from Kellen Acosta at that time, which I thought was kind of a cruel result for Montreal. But so I think there's, you know, for me, the Messi effect is always real and exciting, but I also think it shines a spotlight on the other side of things too, and creates an opportunity for us to take a look at, the other part of the story and what's happening in Montreal is super fascinating for me. But yeah, no doubt about it. The idea that, and the form that Inter Miami and Messi and Suarez and company are in, I think is just otherworldly. So the idea that these two are going to clash together, and at Stade Saputo, which I think is pretty cool. It's one of the best stadiums atmospheres you'll find in MLS. So we've seen it at, like, you know, Arrowhead and 70,000, which is incredible. But the idea that, I think this is the smallest attendance in MLS as far as capacity goes, but definitely not passion. Like, those fans are behind that club and have been for a long time. So I think the atmosphere is going to be, have a little bit of a different twist. Of course, that Quebecois slant is always unique and have their own sort of football culture and identity. So I'm interested to see how that plays out as well.
We're going to hit what's happening in Quebec with the impact, or excuse me, it still feels like the impact at times, CF Montreal. Some of the same themes are there with change and drama, and we've got a trade request as well as a report that the sporting director is out. But first, I'm always interested to hear from former players, no matter when they played, what position, like, their Messi take as they watch him do the things that he's doing. Because I think the most secure way that you measure, in some ways, Lionel Messi's legacy is not the numbers, because those are so obvious. It's the awe from people that are also elite at what he is uber elite at. The people that you're like, oh, well, this is, like, you know, this is the best midfielder in the game right now, talking about Lionel Messi like he's a god. This is the, you know, the best current striker who just can't fathom the things that he did, or his teammates on Barcelona or Argentina teams that just elevate him and put him in a different level because they get to see it every day and they know what true brilliance is and how difficult it is to reach that point. What's your Messi take, man? Like, 10 goals, 12 assists, but the art, what's the art right now?
Well, I think the hard part is, as you mentioned, we all sort of search for comparisons, but it's kind of a fool's errand, even as a former pro, just trying to figure out, how do you compare this guy to anybody that we've ever seen in the game before? It's just impossible. The closest I could get from my playing experience would have been like playing with Cuauhtémoc Blanco, where he would just do something that you were not expecting and you had no idea. And I think when you play with him, you begin to pick up a little bit of what he sees. So I know if he's looking one direction, that means it's still coming to me. It doesn't have to have that. And that can come where it rubs off a little bit as a teammate. But I think for me, the most incredible part of him is really what he's doing with his mind. Like the way that he is repositioning the chess pieces of the other team around to plan ahead where he's going to make the pass, that Rojas goal specifically, where, you know, he sees that pass, you know, a couple seconds ahead of time. And it's just from there, he's just setting it up. He's just moving around Red Bull to put them in spots to then open up that pass. And Rojas knows where it's going. And that's the other part where you can say, all right, well, Messi, yes, he has the connection with Busquets, with Jordi Alba, with Luis Suarez, but Rojas has been there a couple weeks. So it's not just like, oh, he has decades of that understanding and they have that sixth sense between them. He's able to impart that to other players, and credit to Rojas as well for being able to pick up what he's putting down there. So that's the most impressive part for me. And the same thing goes for Suarez as far as those little details. I love watching strikers move on the pitch, and the goal that he scores where, yes, he gets him behind on the one, but the one where he just goes and hides behind Sean Nealis, he just gets lost a little bit. And one of the best coaches I had growing up just told me always to try to find the blind spot. And I think we celebrate striker movement at times where you drag a guy one way and bring him another. He just goes behind him. And then right when he is turned around, he disappears and then just reappears and doesn't need any, you know, he's just so lethal. He doesn't need any time or space. And Messi's just waiting for him to come back onside there. So I just love those little nuances when I watch these guys play, because they are the best at it in the world and maybe we've ever seen.
What I like about the blind side sort of thought is, you know, you think of that in terms of like sort of that volley goal where he's sort of sitting and waiting and Messi is waiting. But it's not always the waiting aspect of it. It's just understanding that this blind spot might exist for half a second. That defender just glanced away from me. That's my moment. And then to have the connection and the timing with your teammate for you both to understand, that's the moment. Like Messi understands the little body movements, the little moments, the little glance, the moment the player looks away. Hey, that's our time. We've done this 100 times before. We've played in behind that center back. We've played in between these lines. Okay, I see you. I recognize you. I understand it's there. And then for Messi to do Rojas or Kramaski or Finiesta, Robert Taylor. Like it just, there's a chemistry there that translates because the ideas and the execution are at such a high level. But I'm curious to get your take on this because we've been debating it on the shows and sort of in the background for a week. How big is this gap between Miami and the rest of the league? I know it's easy to get wrapped up, and I think I was certainly wrapped up in it last Saturday after Messi does the one goal, five assist performance and Inter Miami just wipes the floor with a team that we thought was going to be there. Arguably their biggest challenger that had already beat them 4-0. Like, how big is that gap between Miami and the rest of the league right now?
Right now, it feels big. And I think last weekend was a good example of it. I really rate this Red Bull team. I came out on our This Is MLS show this week and said, I think they can still win the Supporters Shield. That's how good I think this Red Bull team can be. They had a great first half. They had a really strong game plan. You have to turn Miami around and hit in moments in transition, turn them into runners. They were able to get out on the break. It was a lovely move by Forsberg, one to wiggle free and then two to find that pass in behind. And then those secondary pursuits from Miami are not there. They can't really turn and go. And if you send numbers as Red Bull did, even if it comes off a rebound, you're going to get rewarded there. So that's kind of the key as far as how you get out against Miami. The problem is the margins are just so small that one can turn to two, can turn to three, can turn to six very quickly against this Inter Miami team. And the timing of this for me more than anything is an in-form Messi, an in-form Suarez, a healthy team. Even with the injuries they have, the margins are so small that you can't really get away with much. So that's the scary part of this team right now, at least.
Wouldn't you know it, the other team that's beaten them in MLS play, CF Montreal, that's the matchup this weekend and the one that you get to call, Kalen Carr. Really looking forward to it. Let's start with the headlines, unfortunately, for Montreal. They always seem to be lurking under the surface. The water is now boiling up there in Quebec. The first one that came out was Mathieu Chouinard wants a trade. He's requested a trade from his boyhood club. This is per Tom Bogert. Contract talks, according to Tom, had gone on for months without an agreement, and those talks are currently dead, and Chouinard says, I want out. He has been a crucial cog for this team. I think he got a new contract maybe 2 years ago, but that was before he was a starter, before he was like, put him in the lineup, you cannot get this guy out. And as we know, an all-star as well. And then Olivier Renard, according to Tom Bogert, is out, all caps, O-U-T. That was off a report that Tony Marinaro up there in Canada had first reported out, and that sources are saying there's friction between Renard and Joey Saputo. Now, Renard's been there about 5 years, has had a good run. But man, I said it on Twitter, Montreal is never boring. Unfortunately for Montreal, this feels like sort of deja vu. It feels like Groundhog Day. We're back again where there's just this underlying tension in the club. And I don't know that change now, this season, in this moment, is what's going to take this project to the next level.
Yeah, no, it's troubling because, look, this week especially, having Inter Miami and Messi coming to town is enough pressure to put on a club, right? That's a scary proposition right now. But then when you add on top of it, the distractions, the pressure around the club or within it, it's a big job for Laurent Courtois to be able to really bat the hatches down, focus on the players, which he's come out and said they're doing. Even some of the posting that they're putting up has been, even Courtois himself has been, hey, this is our group, right? And I've been on teams where there's turmoil and things are happening around it. And at times, maybe that's a good opportunity to say, hey, look, we are the underdogs, right? This is just our position here. There's a lot going around. We have to focus on this. But when you zoom out a little bit, it is troubling because you mentioned the manager turnover, I believe 10 different managers in 12 years. So that's not a recipe for success. And then when you also think of what they've lost out the door, Wilfred Nancy being the biggest of them, and the immediate success we've seen now winning MLS Cup with Columbus and now in the CONCACAF Champions Cup final. That's scary because you have to, if you don't value your internal assets and you're not recognizing it, and that would be the argument that Chouinard is going for when he's going forward to say, hey, look what I've done for this club. He plays five different positions. Not many players in MLS can do that. He sacrificed for the team. I believe as far as chance creation goes, any kind of running metric, of course, like he's off the charts with all of that.
He's Montreal, like to the core.
And that's the other part is that I think he represents something bigger there, right? Like he represents the hometown kid, the Quebecois kid who has kind of come good, gone through every measure of the academy up to the first team. But I know sometimes that that doesn't always mean you get the contract, right? That doesn't always mean that that is recognized or valued appropriately. So I hope that that works out for the club. I hope it works out for him because I think he's rightly gotten a little bit more pub over time, but maybe flown a little bit under the radar, even when you think of those great teams from Montreal that got a little more credit with Wilfred Nancy. Like it was more Georgi Mihailovic, it was, you know, Kone, these players that were more central figures there, and now it's become more really Chouinard as a central figure there now. And so I think that's where you're starting to see the disconnect, but I've no doubt that he's not going to change the way he plays because that's just how it goes. So the contract talks I'm sure will be a big conversation, especially amongst the media and the fans. But I mean, just last week he's playing in like a wing back position and, you know, running all over the place. So the idea that he's being used in different spots, you're never going to question that there.
So this is probably a good time, and I don't know how I didn't do it off the top, to tell you that Wilfred Nancy will be with us in just a second for a very entertaining and informative interview that we did on Wednesday ahead of the Hell is Real match this weekend for Rivalry Week. So yeah, I kind of buried the lead on that one. The Chouinard one is crazy to me. The timing was so weird because that report comes out right after the window closes. So to me, and look, I'm just reading the tea leaves, reading between the lines. Don't be reporting this to anybody as if I'm like sourced out. I know this for sure. To me, this feels like Chouinard putting pressure on the club to say, I want to stay. Here's this essentially, this long negotiation window. Like, let's find a way to get this done. And it is crazy to me that you wouldn't pay the man. I understand that you gave him a new contract a couple years ago when his role and his place in the team were completely different. Like, don't you want your players to perform at a level to where they deserve more? Like, that's the whole point, right? For a club like Montreal, whether it is you sell them then or you resign them, that's your decision. But Chouinard could be the sort of like crux that you build around and develop players around for the next 5 or 6 years, who understands the core essence of the club, who connects with your supporters, who gives you a forward-facing identity and super high level. I look at the club roster profiles came out for MLS, and thank God MLS PR got behind that one and got it done. Finally, we just have this information we've never had before in very clear terms. When you look at the TAM players on this team, Kwadwo Poku, Joseph Martinez, Damik Yankov, Lasse Lapalainen, Matias Kokoro, Fernando Alvarez, Schwanier is arguably more influential than every single one of them. Give the dude, I don't know, 600K year one, up it by 50K every year for 4 years. To replace him, you got to spend a bunch of money in the transfer market that you probably aren't going to do. Pay him. And I don't know if that has anything to do with Olivier Renard, then whatever this is. I don't know what's happening with him in the club. Coming out and there being reports that he's out. This feels like a little bit of the same thing with Schwanier, which is, yo, things aren't right. Like, let's fix it and fix our relationship. Because the reports are that he's out, but he's not. There's no press release. It's not like he's gone yet. This is a dude that sold 3 players for like $20 million for you, that has been very good in the internal market, that has gotten no budget. They have one DP. It's Victor Wanyama. He's not even playing. And they're getting results? How can you have him leave? How can it be good for your club for him to leave? It can't be. It can't be. What I would say about Montreal is, under Courtois, they have a ton of potential. But if you're a Montreal supporter, or you're me sitting back watching the project, wanting them to succeed, because I think Courtois is a great coach and there are good young players there, just love to see him invest at a level that, you know, is like mid-table in MLS. And I'm not saying they haven't. Kokoro was an investment. Yankov was an investment. Yes, but this league is going different places when it comes to roster building. And I would like to see Montreal keep up, and I would love to see Schwanier and Renard stay, but we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. Speaking of potential departures, Carol Walton in Charlotte, who does a great job covering that team, says that that the departure of Enzo Copetti to Rosario Central is imminent. There was a report out of Argentina, and Carol is saying, yes, that is correct. I'm hearing that this is going to happen. The DP cleanout continues for Charlotte, huh, Kalen?
Yeah, I mean, I like this move if they can get it done, because we've seen Dean Smith come in right away and he basically said, these are not my designated players. I didn't sign these players. And since then, he's continued to move forward with, you know, really changing the profile of this team, changing the tactics, simplifying things, giving them a better structure. And so the idea that, I know Copetti got his first goal last week of the season, but you know, that's probably not, it is kind of bearing fruit as to what he was saying. So the idea that now they would be able to go out into the market and use that roster space, use that flexibility and get something out of this in the meantime is really more of a commitment to what Dean Smith is trying to build, because they have a good foundation. The question is more just, where's the top end talent to really, as you mentioned, compete with the arms race that is the Eastern Conference right now, the way teams are spending. And so to use those really crucial roster spots, you have to hit on your DP still. That's just the way it goes in MLS.
Leo Abada seems like a pretty good signing. What we do know about Charlotte is they're not afraid to spend. And they're, I mean, what I love is that they're not afraid to move on. That's one of the most difficult things to do in Major League Soccer, given the DP rule and the way the cap is set up and roster spots are set up. Moving on is sometimes harder than actually making the deal if it doesn't work out. And Dean Smith was just like, no, I think we can figure this out. Yeah, I think we can make some moves. And, you know, to Charlotte's credit, the reason they can make a move like this is because Patrick Agyeman has been so good. They went and drafted a kid and developed him a little bit, got him some time down at Crown Legacy and moved him into the first team, and he's cooking. He's cooking. By the way, other news for Charlotte, Kervin Vargas re-upped his contract, so he will stay as a U22 for a little while before he has a senior deal after that. But perhaps a big move. We'll see if that Enzo Copetti move goes official. How about Marco Royce? Would you like to see him in St. Louis?
I would, but I have questions because of the age profile. It just seems like St. Louis will never sign anybody who's over a certain age. He's 34 years old. Of course, you can't question the pedigree or the talent. And but I just wonder if that fits into the way that they want to play, how that might shift and change their identity a little bit. But I'd love to see it. It makes sense at the same time from a lot of perspective as well, because, you know, it's Berkey, but Berkey is a goalkeeper, right? So that changes it. But even when I think of just the way that this team is set up to play, it would be a little bit of a shift if they brought in Royce, it seems like.
Well, let me throw out a scenario for you. And it's probably not something that Marco Royce would do. Maybe he would. I don't know. But reportedly interest from Turkey and some other spots as well. What if Marco Royce would accept a Roman Berkey or maybe a Hugo Lloris? I guess we have a lot of goalkeepers mixed into this. Or I guess a Luis Suarez contract. What if Marco Royce said, I don't need to be a designated player. I've talked to my boy Roman. Like, this is, it seems fun. I'll come on TAM. Does that change your decision-making process?
Yes, absolutely. You jump at that. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I love St. Louis, but I don't know. We have yet to see that happen without Messi,
without a coastal destination.
Yeah, exactly. Without LAFC. So while I would love to see that happen, something tells me, That might be a tricky one. If they pull that off, though, that'd be some good business. Yeah,
maybe a stretch. Love you, Midwest. Love you, St. Louis. All right, let's get to it. Rivalry week coming up. There are three huge match days, three windows for you. First up this weekend, Saturday and Sunday, and then we're gonna have games midweek. I can't remember. Is that the first time this year? Either way, love.
Weeby, I do love, by the way, that you're like Matthew Chouanier. We gotta pay this guy more. Then you're like, designated players, we got to pay less. Hey, this is extra time, baby.
Listen. Royce made his money, all right? We're just trying to get Matthew up in a different tax bracket, okay? Anyway, rivalry week coming up Saturday, Sunday, and then Wednesday and Saturday. Full listing of all the games. We're going to rank 13 of these games, but first we got to warm ourselves up for a draft, and that means a Golden Boot draft update. Kalen Carr, who do you think is winning right now in the Golden Boot draft?
Oh, Tom. I trust Tom. I've put my entire faith. I've mortgaged my future. I don't have a mortgage. I rent, live in Brooklyn. But if I had a mortgage, Tom would be the one managing it. I give him all my trust. I assume we're at the top. We have to be.
You are not at the top. Tom's trust is not worth as much as maybe that you're making it out to be. Luis Muriel, zero goals. Jesus Ferreira, just one goal. It could get better, though. It could get better. The Fightin' Weebies, number one. 41 goals to 39 goals for Tom and Kalen. Luis Suarez was a good draft pick by me. So was Chicho Arango, et cetera, et cetera. I'm sitting on Brian White. My only zero is Bernard Camungo, but we got faith that that's going to somehow, some way get turned around. We shall see. In third, the Fightin' Doyles, 33 goals. And in last, David Goss has 20 goals, and he has counted 1, 2, 3 players on zero and 4 players on one. So tough for Dave in the Golden Boot draft standings. Let's get into it. Let's draft some rivalries. Let's set the standards here. So these are games that you want to go see. You want to watch them. You want to be at them. You want to feel the environment. You want to see the competitive nature of them. It's going to be a good game, a good night. You're going to have a great time. That's how we're drafting here. So it can be on history. You can include that. I mean, you can include passion, all those things that can be part of your mix, but it's not primarily about history and what has come before. It's about what you're going to experience on this particular night. Coming up this week, some big games on Saturday and Sunday. Hell is Real, free on Apple TV, 7:45 p.m. Eastern on Saturday. You've also got Copa Tejas action between Dallas and Austin. St. Louis City hosts the Chicago Fire, and then on Sunday, free on Apple TV as well on Season Pass. You've got the Timbers hosting Seattle Sounders. That's Cascadia. And then Match Day 14 and 15 have more games as well. Start us off. You have the first pick. Who are you taking?
Well, I'd say I'm not going to be able to watch this one because it's coming out at the same time as my game. But if I had a choice, it would be Hell is Real. I think that one, for me, has got to be number one right now. The match is in Columbus, and I have yet to be at that new stadium yet. So that's definitely on my bucket list of places to go experience a game. So, yeah. The stakes that last year, I think rivalries need stakes. They need to have consequential moments, and that decided who was going to go to MLS Cup and host it. And so the fact that Columbus got on top, won MLS Cup, and then now for me is like the most exciting team to watch. And I understand Inter Miami is, otherworldly, but in the terrestrial world, the way Columbus plays with the ball as a team, what they're doing in CONCACAF Champions Cup, for me is just fantastic. And I'm honored to be even on the same podcast as Wilfred Nancy this week. That's how good he's been. The way he handled the Cucho Hernandez situation, the way he got bought in, he got bought in from the team, the way he backed his staff in difficult moments. And then what he's done going against Tigres, going against Rayados, I mean, it's just been tremendous. So that's one side of it. And then the other side is Cincinnati, the way that they've continued what they did last year, again, with a bunch of change. I think last year they had 14 one goal victories. This year they have 6 wins. 5 of them are also from one goal. So they're kind of have that same defensive structure. They've added to it almost in a way with Yedlin and Miles Robinson strong in the back. And then, of course, they still have last year's MVP with Lucho's still cooking. So the fact that those two going back again, it's marquee. I think this has to be the number one matchup for me.
I agree with you. I do think it simplifies things a little bit for Pat Noonan, not in the best way, not in an ideal way, that Aaron Bupenza is unavailable for 6 to 8 weeks after having his jaw broken, reportedly. I don't know if we've talked about this on the show. Again, it felt in a little blind zone between shows, but Bupenza out, the incident report and the reporting is that he was part of an incident with a professional boxer late at night on a Monday night in Cincinnati. So The Athletic has all the details on that one. It is one of the most bizarre, insane stories of the year, maybe ever in MLS, in which there's a bumper crop of those stories, but it just sort of seems like part of the journey so far for Bupenza in Cincinnati. And it has been bumpy and it has been roundabout and has not lived up to the expectations. But for now, Cincinnati can focus on their group. And it seems like Kubo and Baird are the right runners with Lucho. I'm going to take Cascadia off the top. Give me Timbers, Seattle. I'm going to take it because Seattle seems to really struggle in these of late, and they're in a desperate point, and so are the Timbers. And I just think the stink of desperation in rivalry matches is just a wonderful combination. There is going to be two teams who understand very clearly the stakes for them in terms of the table, in terms of their season and expectations, and they're going to have to go out and take 3 points from the team that is their fan group's biggest bogey. And it's going to have 50 years of history behind it. So give me Cascadia. How about the third pick? Where are we going?
I like the Cascadia pick. One thing I saw a note this week, Seattle haven't beat Portland in like 6 matches.
Yeah, it's so been a second, huh?
Yeah, so I think Schmetzer even said after the last time, I don't know if this is even a rivalry. It doesn't feel like a rivalry right now. So that was before things had gotten bad. Both teams, as you mentioned, desperate. So yeah, I've got my eye on that as well. I like that pick. I'm going to go to, let's see, Toronto and Montreal. I'm sticking in Canada. I've spent so much time in Canada this year. I've got to represent. Toronto have been one of the best stories. John Herdman has been, you know, incredible as far as being able to find a system that works for this team, deal with injuries, deal with the internal politics or drama from last year's locker room, the scar tissue that is left over from wooden spoon winning season, I guess you would call it. I mean, it's just so crazy to think of all of the different things you would have to manage. Probably the hardest hit team by injuries throughout the season. They've been able to find, you know, some really good moments from young players, Shaquille Marshall-Ruddy, Spicer has been good. Prince Owusu has emerged as a number 9. Now you start to think, oh, what does that look like when Insigne is reportedly very close to coming back? Him and Bernadeschi now have a 9 option as a reference point with Osorio and Longstaff and Deby Flores and all the others roaming underneath. So, and the back line has been very strong, has given them a good platform so that they can take their moment whenever it comes and get goals. So I've been pretty impressed by the way that they have been now 3rd in the East. And then that rivalry for me also, as you mentioned with Cascadia, this one has history. I was at the conference final, that crazy one back and forth with Josie and the way Montreal was going back and forth between those two legs and ended up going to MLS Cup and Toronto winning it. So yeah, I'm going to take that one 3rd.
Okay. You took my choice off the table and now I'm faced with a conundrum. What kind of person am I? That's what I'm trying to figure out right now. On one hand, I like to pride myself in being very inclusive. Everyone's welcome. I love all the stories in Major League Soccer. On the other hand, Messi. So I could go Orlando, Miami. I think it's going to be a great match. Orlando, clearly desperate, and they also sort of tried to punch Miami in the mouth last year in Leagues Cup and just couldn't quite get it done. So there's a little history already between the two. But I'm going to go Rocky Mountain Cup. I know this one has been a stinker for a while now because RSL has been so utterly dominant, but Colorado got that first dub of the season, and now they have an opportunity to finish off the series in Utah against an RSL team that's at the top of the West, has Chicho Arango firing on all cylinders, and seems to be in a different echelon than years past. So I'm going Rocky Mountain Cup. We are elevating the Rocky Mountain Cup above Lionel Messi.
Wow.
Staying true to my soul.
I love it. I mean,
on the pillow tonight, I'm not even going to go straight to sleep. No regrets.
Well, it makes sense as far as the table goes, because you look at the Western Conference, it's the number one team against Colorado is five right now. So these are two top half teams in the West that are going for it, whereas Orlando season has not gone the way they would have liked. So I like that pick from that perspective. And I agree, Chris Armas has done a really, really good job, and Mastroeni. So two OG MLS heads. And yeah, I can't hate on that pick. That said, I will take Miami. Yeah, I will take Inter Miami and Orlando next off the board. And partly because the thing you mentioned was the Orlando tried to punch them in the mouth last Leagues Cup, and they gave them a run for their money. But then ultimately, the way that Miami team responded in that match was, you know, there. It's not like it wasn't Suarez at the time, but it's not like Messi has not had teams try to be physical with him. And he responded to the moment, of course, and they went through. But then this year, for me, that was almost the match that tanked Orlando City, and where they lost all their confidence, and I think it was 5-0 in that match. So the way that we saw the New York Derby pop off with the Red Wedding, that really lit that rivalry. I kind of feel like that's where we're at with this Orlando-Miami one, where maybe I mentioned the stakes of one match of the Columbus and Cincinnati. This one is just embarrassment. The way that they were just embarrassed also adds to the rivalry. So I'm going to take that one off the board there.
Embarrassment is a powerful emotion. Like, think about it in terms of the memories from your life that stand out that you can feel viscerally. I don't know about anybody else, but for me, a lot of them are around embarrassment of just being like, God, I will never forget the way that made me feel. We'll see if they can make it count against Miami. That's basically what everybody's trying to do against Miami these days. I'll take next pick, Hudson River Derby for me. It's a city field, which I both like and don't like. I like it because it is a little feel of like, oh, hey, this is our home in the future. Like, let's, you know, we're showing you where you're going to be later on, New York Red Bulls, except we'll be on our own stadium. But New York City, though they got the couple wins in a row, had a tough one against the Rapids, and they need to bounce back. And who better than against the Red Bulls? I just think the styles are going to be interesting. The pressure on Nick Cushing that's dissipated a little bit could come back in a match like this. And I still feel like New York has a different level that they can reach. We saw it against Inter Miami in the first meeting, but it's feeling like it's sort of wavering since then. So it's maybe a statement game for them too, to get back on the track of, hey, we could win the Supporters Shield. Just, you know, Kalen Carr said so. So we can do it.
There you go.
We can do it. All right. Like it. What do you got next?
This is going to go, this might be cheating, but I'm going to bundle a few matches into one. And it's all of the Texas matches. I'm going to take them all.
Just a Copa Tejas bundle.
Copa Tejas, 1 week. We've got Dallas playing Austin to kick things off. Then 4 days later, Austin plays Houston. Then 3 days later, Houston plays Dallas. So I'm going to, you know, I think somebody should do this road trip, actually. This would be pretty fun just to drive around Texas, document this whole thing. This looks pretty fun to see. And I think Austin has the upper hand right now in overall, right?
6 points so far in Copa Tejas. I think they could technically seal it if they win in Dallas and maybe reliant on some results in future matches. But certainly after this week, Austin could definitely seal it. And it's tight because you would go to all three cities, Dallas, then Austin, then Houston, and you get all three matchups as well. So I think that bundle is a good call. I'm going to take DC Red Bulls next. I'm calling this the Troy Lesane game. I know that there's more to it, but, you know, Benteke and Forsberg and Lewis Morgan and Click and Van Zier, there's talent in this match. And sometimes we haven't always been able to say that about both sides. And they're also very, very clear identities. But most of all, I just want to see how Lesane handles going up against the team he was interim for last year and then left. All right, we have three more selections, two more picks, and a sad trombone. Who's your selection? Your final selection, Kalen.
I'm trying to see who's left here. Okay, so we have Nashville, Atlanta, right?
You got Seattle, Vancouver, or St. Louis, Chicago.
Okay. I'm going to go St. Louis, Chicago.
Call of the Windy City.
Yeah, I'm going to go for it. St. Louis, another city I haven't been to, or I've been to, but I haven't seen a match. And, you know, one of the best atmospheres in MLS. Chicago, we talked about desperation, needing points. But also the historic rivalry between, I lived in Chicago. People do not like St. Louis sports. Same in reverse. It goes both directions. And I think St. Louis and Kansas City has been one of the better rivalries that would be high up on this list if it was in here. But I think the idea that Chicago could sneak in the back door, try to make something of it, is exciting. So I hope they come in looking to punch, but St. Louis, a tough place to go visit.
East-West is the only time we'll see those teams this year. Good choice there. I'll finish this off with Seattle, Vancouver. Got to stick with Cascadia. I really enjoy watching Vancouver this year, and it's a critical, critical week for the Seattle Sounders. If they lose to the Portland Timbers, this match is going to take on pretty epic proportions in their side of the woods. And by the way, midweek, they'll also be at Salt Lake. So massive week for the Sounders. That means sad trombone goes to Nashville and Atlanta. Come on, raise the rivalry level, guys. Let's get some heat. Let's get some heat in there. I want to see it. It doesn't help that their first meeting kind of didn't exactly live up to expectations, Kalen, because of injury. But I think there's something here. We just got to suss it out.
Yeah, I need to see a little more there. I'm ready for it. But they're on my squad now, right?
We're all sharing that one.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, good. It's a sad trombone. We're all sharing that one.
How do we decide who wins?
Nobody. Pure enjoyment. Pure enjoyment.
Fair enough.
I think I'll take my group. I'll take my group. You take yours, and we'll see where we end up at the end of the day. Kalen, thank you so much for joining us. Roll on, man. Your week is a big one. We'll be watching and listening in Montreal, right?
Love it, man. Appreciate you having me on. As always, make sure to watch Andrew Wiebe on the wrap-up show every week. It's like the best way for me at least to start kind of like coming out of the world of the match that I called and then catch up on everything that happened across the league. And then I immediately start digging more into the other matches. But it's such a great show. You're great on it, along with the whole crew. I think last week, Kevin Egan, or no, what was it, a couple weeks ago? You guys shoulder barged him, which yes. I really appreciate. Yeah,
Sasha sent him into the third row.
Yeah, you can't miss it. So I appreciate what you guys are doing, man. It's awesome. So fun to watch.
Always bet on one compliment from Kalen, and I appreciate that. That's why you're on. No, I'm just kidding. But this is MLS is out right now as well. So go check that out on the MLS YouTube page. You can see clips on MLS Season Pass as well. From one legend to another. I leave you, Kalen Carr, and now Wilfred Nazi takes the stage. Enjoy the interview, everybody. It's an absolute joy to welcome Wilfred Nazi to the show. You know him well, the manager of the MLS champion Columbus Crew, and maybe, just maybe, the CONCACAF Champions Cup champions as well in the final against Pachuca's. Hell is real coming up this weekend. It's a rivalry match. Wilfred, thank you for joining Extra Time.
That's a pleasure.
Word is you spent some time off with your family. Of course, the weekend, no game for you. But I heard through the grapevine that you were on the golf course a little bit. I'm a little bit of a nut here myself, but I have to ask this question. Do you find similarities between golf and soccer? Can you take things you do on the golf course and apply it to your day job?
Every day I do it. I use, because of golf, golf gives me more composure when I coach. Because golf is a game of mistakes, and soccer also, but golf, this is so difficult. So because of that, I am able to understand more, you know, my players, and also I know that they want to do well. So, and for me also, golf is details. When you try to practice, when you try to play, it's all about details, repetition, details, and a lot of emotions. But when you play, you have to be cold, because if you are not cold, fade, everything. So this is so difficult. So that's why I use golf to teach myself and also to be better as a teacher.
There's always a next moment in golf. And it feels like your players always feel like that next moment is a fresh one. And I want to get to that with you in a second. But I also know that I might be keeping you from one work, but maybe a Champions League semifinal as well. Real Madrid and Bayern Munich about to play. But I'm more curious who you watch in soccer, abroad? Who do you admire as far as managers and play abroad and also in MLS?
Yeah. Listen, I don't have, to be honest with you, I don't have really a name. I like to watch everything because what I like to do, to be honest with you, is I like to read the post-game match of a coach. And depending what he says, I'm going to watch, you know, the correlation between that. So obviously, when Klopp is really good for the pressing, you know, to with the front three against six players. So I've learned that also. Guardiola is Guardiola in terms of the way he plays with his big star, but he plays like when we were, you know, playing with our friends, but in a more structured way. Mourinho, the management, and so on. But after that, you know, there is also recently I wanted to watch Emre, you know, because I really like the structure defensively. You know, he's able to change the structure defensively. For the moment, Arteta is so good to defend as a team and to attack as a team, you know, with the block narrow and so on. Obviously, Xabi Alonso is good also to get a certain structure on the pitch, but to give freedom. So every year there is new coach that I like to follow, not follow, but I like to watch a bit what they do. And after that, I do my own minestrone soup.
Like a good, I did not see minestrone soup coming from you, Wilfred. I gotta say, that was not the food reference that I was expecting. There were some words in there that I've heard you use often and that I try to think about when I watch games. And the two that stand out are sort of structure and freedom. And they feel like they're a little bit opposed, but it feels like when I watch your team, it's like a beautiful dance between the two.
Yeah. For me, there is no creativity within structure. See, this is the way I see it. To express, to have freedom and to create something, you need concepts. And within the concepts, after that, players can move freely because they respect the game and they respect the concept. So this is between position and relation. So it's a mix of everything, you know. So yes, position. In the past, I was more a positional play coach. So you have to stay in your position. The ball is going to come. Now I am in between a bit. So yes, we like to exploit the weak side, but I need only one guy on the weak side. And where is the ball? I need a lot of density, many players close to each other to manipulate the opposition to go towards the goal or to go around or to go in between. It depends. But this is a mix between position and relation.
As I hear you say that, I'm seeing Diego Rossi's goal and you overload the right side and you make that switch to the left and then it's just a beautiful through ball. And all of a sudden, here's the width, here's the depth from your fullbacks, here are the runners. I would love to hear you walk me through your vision of how that goal was scored and how it relates to the principles that you're teaching your team on a daily basis.
Yeah, I was so happy because, you know, sometimes I make mistakes when I'm not good to, after a game, to do the post-game review because I need to rewatch the game. And sometimes, so after the Monterrey game, I said, yeah, it was not our best game with the ball. But when I watched the game, it was a really good game, knowing the condition, knowing what we did. So obviously the goal that we scored with Diego, I was so pleased because this is exactly what we tried to create. So the idea is all the time to attack the box. So, but now if the opposition we play, regarding depending the opposition was going to give us. So what I like about the goal that we scored with Diego is the rhythm. So we slow down the rhythm with many players around the ball, try to attack in the same side, but it was not possible to attack on this side. So we tried to create a little bit time to move the ball on the opposite side, and we kept the time edge that we had. So what I like is we were slow. We control the tempo, and suddenly when we find that we had the time to attack, we speed up the play, and after that, we score. And for me, this is exactly what we try to do, try to play with the rhythm. So sometimes it could be two passes, sometimes it could be 25 passes, but this is exactly what we try to achieve, yes.
I was looking back through sort of my own memory banks, Wilfred, but also through your past, and trying to, one, connect and see if you were an assistant with Montreal when they placed Pachuca in the Champions League. It was 1 year off, I think. I think you were still down in the academy. Yeah. But I was wondering, throughout that time, what's the most formative experience you've had as a manager? What's the thing that you still sort of think about every now and then, or maybe even every day, that you refer back to? Like, it could be an aha moment. It could just be a clicking moment. Is there a time in your managerial career where you just thought, whoa, that is huge, and I'm going to hold it with me?
No, I think there is many things. You know, the coach of the job of a coach is for me is try to help my players to get better. And what I've learned is sometimes it's going to be about tactic, sometimes it's going to be about mental, technique, or physique, and also management. And when I started to become a coach on the academy, I was saying that, hey, you know what, Wilfried, if you're good tactically, it's going to be okay. No, because at the end of the day, I don't remember which game, but halftime, I didn't want to talk about tactic because it was not about tactic. It was about, hey, guys, be yourself. Play the game. So what I've learned is with all the coaches that I work with is everybody's different. It's all about personality. It's all about what the way you are as a person and to be true to yourself. So that's why for me, I learned that. I've learned that any kind of environment, is it possible to embrace and to be yourself? And they stick with me because this is exactly what I try to transmit to my players when we played in Mexico against the Mexican team. Okay, we play away. Okay, big crowd, it's going to be loud. It's going to be a really huge atmosphere. But is it possible to stay on the task and to play the way we want to play with the ball, without the ball, to be ugly sometimes, to be elegant sometimes, and so on? So this is what I've learned. And this is a day-to-day work. It cannot happen like this suddenly. This is, you have to be coherent with your message. And it's been something that I've learned a lot. And I am like this also as a person. I like when there is common sense, you know, in life. I know that sometimes life is could be difficult and this is not logical, but how you can go back to common sense when you can.
It feels like belief is a word that I just kept popping into my head throughout. Like, what's it take to build that belief in players that then goes into a club that a manager has, that then this entire ecosystem can kind of feed on and be bigger than the sum of its parts? How do you create belief? How do you do it? In individuals, in a team? Like, is it science? Is it art? How do you do it?
No, everything, to be honest with you. This is everything. This is, first of all, I have to, with a lot of humility, I had to do my homework. You know, in terms of what does it mean to understand people? What does it mean to to have ideas? For me, this is all about clarity. Clarity in what I want to do in my vision and also the vision of the club. That's why we work together. But also how I can maximize the potential that I have in front of me with my players. So it's all about challenge and support, try to challenge them, try to support them off the pitch and on the pitch. And sometimes it's funny because when I watch myself on videos coaching, there is certain things that I do that I said, Wilfried, come on, you cannot do that. But this is the passion behind that, you know, and this is and for me, the most important virtue is courage. Because without courage, you cannot do anything in life. I put this word on my paper and I try to think about it. And at the end of the day, to ask my wife to marry me, I needed courage. To have kids, I needed also courage because I know that this is a different life. To come here in Montreal or United States, I needed courage also. To trust your vision, you need that also because people is going to say, maybe now me, I would have done something different. Or this is why are you doing that? So it's all about courage and also trust in what you do. So belief, this is a big word, a cliche word. But at the same time, I like to not to use all the time this word, but to show that with this kind of behavior, we can achieve many things.
So much of that is psychological, yeah, as opposed to physical. And I think when we talk about sports and professional sports in particular, it's very easy to get focused on the physical side. But I've heard you in the past talk about the brain, and clearly you're thinking about the brain and personality and something deeper when you're trying to get the most out of your players. How do you consider that aspect of life and development in an environment that tends to emphasize the physical?
Yeah, it's crucial. But we are lucky to live also in this area, you know, because in the past, when I was young, it was not like that. You have to say something, you have to do something, shut your mouth and do it. And now, because when I was young, this is, it was the way people was doing that for me, you know, you understand what I mean. Mm-hmm. So I've learned that brain, this is the most important, because the complexity of the brain is so powerful. But at the same time, without that, this is difficult to be consistent, and it's easy to talk, but can we do it? And to do it, brain sometimes is your brain is tired. So that's why I was talking previously that yes, it's really important to train with a maximum intensity, but this is also really important to rest. And I have no problem to give many days off to my players, because the brain controls everything. And me, the type of person that I am, I need freshness to be good in terms of decision making. So I need to balance my life to be able to, yes, I work a lot, but I try also to find the balance to have freshness. And it's been proven that this is like that. Now, if you take time a bit to make research, and you're going to see that there is a lot of tools that you can use to get better with your decision making and to trust yourself a little bit more. So for me, this is really important, because the only thing that I'm waiting, that I wait and I wait and I wait, is data for the brain. Because everybody talk about data, but data for me, this is a context. This is an addition of the context. And you know, sometimes data, a player who doesn't touch the ball can create a goal. But we cannot see that, you know, and the brain controls everything for that. So, but yeah, for me, this is really, really, really important. I cannot dissociate the game that we do, that we try to do. It's all about concept, but within concept, there is also decision making. There is effort first, because without effort, you cannot do anything. So I don't want to spend time to tell my player to make effort. There is audacity, because the way we want to play and the way what we want to do, we have to be brave and you have to try things. And there is the brain. The brain is all about IQ soccer. Are you a growth mindset or you are a fixed mindset? Growth mindset could be better. Fixed mindset, I have to maybe modify certain things with you, because at the end of the day, it's going to be difficult when you want to compete.
There was definitely a mental hump for MLS teams in Mexico, specifically against some of these giants that you guys have so far knocked off. What were you most proud of for the performances against Tigres and Monterrey? What were the things that really brought you pride in your team?
We were so good in difficult moments. We know that, and that we can create good stuff, that we can create something. We know that. But the challenge that I have with my players is, in difficult moments, is it possible to embrace it and I want you to dare, you know, this kind of moments. And we did it. We did it against Tigres. We could have conceded, you know, many goals, but they didn't score. And after that, we found a way to bounce back, you know, and against Monterrey, we had also difficult moments. But this is when you take the time to watch any kind of games, Champions League or in Europe or in MLS, they all have difficult moments. High levels of sport, this is a dynamic. And for me, the best team is the team who is able, when we are down, try to get up as soon as possible, you know, knowing that we're going to get these moments. So last year, we were not able, when we had difficult moments, we were down for many times, you know, you understand my English. But now we are able to get better, you know, and this is for me the key point.
Felt like that Orlando game and the aftermath maybe last year was a transition for you guys in closing down games. And you had to do it against Monterrey, and I'm sure you'll have to do it against Pachuca as well. This is a unique championship match. It's one game at altitude at Pachuca. The phrase that I've heard you say before that jumps to mind, at least in MLS's past in this competition, is, quote, impossible as an opinion. What kind of test is this going to be against Pachuca in early June? And what would the title mean if you guys can capture it?
I'm so excited to play this game. You know, if I would have been a magician, you know, I would have played now this game. Because there is a lot of things that we cannot control. Altitude, you know, so we're gonna try to prepare the team with that. So obviously, my staff had discussion yesterday to see if we have to go early, you know, so 10 days or 1 week before, or if we go only 2 days before. So in research, there is a pros and cons, you know, both can be good. So we know that it's gonna be only one game. We know that we're gonna play a final away in Pachuca. It's going to be loud. This is not Monterrey. Monterrey, it was safe. Pachuca, this is not the case. So we had many adversity, but I love it. I love it because, again, my job with my staff and myself is to find ways not to motivate the players, because I know that if we win this game, we do Intercontinental Cup and also the World Cup clubs, you know what I mean? So now it's going to be, we're going to be able, you know, to balance that and to be ourselves. So for me, tactically, it's going to be amazing to prepare this game for sure, but also emotionally, you know, because there is a final at the end. And we played the final last year against LAFC. I was really proud of the quality of the game. So we're going to try to do it, knowing that it's going to be another topic. But this is huge and this is amazing. This is amazing to play this kind of game.
I'm looking forward to it. I'm also thinking, as you mentioned LAFC, what you went through to get there, and specifically Hell is Real in the conference final and a 2-0 deficit that you came back from. Speaking of moments that showed adversity and a response.
Yeah.
What do you think Cincinnati's thinking coming into this meeting? They got to be thinking, boy, we got some payback for the crew.
Like I said before, they want to kill us. Simple as that. It's normal because, you know, about what happened last year, and we won the final away and the game and so on. So obviously, competitive spirits, you know, they want to show that that can beat us. So so again, it's going to be a good game, a lot of emotions, because this is important for the city and also for the fans. So it's going to be a big game, a good game. I hope that you're going to be able to have a good performance to try to win this game.
So in a rivalry, there is that antagonism, as you mentioned there, but I think there's also respect, especially among good teams. What do you respect about FC Cincinnati and what they've done?
The consistency of to win, you know, the supporter shield last year. For me, don't forget, I come from Europe. I understand the MLS system. I understand the American culture. And I'm happy with that. I'm happy to discover and to be here to discover that. But it was huge to be good for 34 games. Bravo. So for me, they are the winners. And after that, yes, MLS Cup, this is important, and we know that this is more important for the moment than the supporter shield. But for me, the MLS Cup, the way I see it, is a kind of a Champions League, you know, because there is a lot of factors. So sometimes it depends the team that you face, if you play home, away, sometimes it's irrational, I would say, in one game or two games. So, but the consistency to be champion during the season, this is huge. So well done for that. Pat has been also really good to manage the team in a good way. They don't change too much the way they play. But yes, they maybe overperform, I would say, in terms of data. But I don't mind data. At the end of the day, it's a fact that they were good last year. They were consistent. So good for them.
The data of your recent results is draws, 5 straight draws and a loss before that in the league. And of course, that's balanced with the Champions Cup. But I hear you say, I'm from Europe. Remember, Cincinnati are the champion. How much does the Shield matter to you? Is that something that you desperately want to win this year, or have you written that off at all?
No, this year, I don't know, but for sure, I would like to win the Supporters Shield one day, for sure, because for me, this is all about consistency. And this is good as a coach to be able to, with my players, to be able to find a way to be consistent like that. So, yes, I would like to one day achieve this. I don't know if it's going to be this year or next year. I don't know when. But for sure, this is something that it's a good challenge for me.
Wilfred, we'll leave it here. New contract, congratulations. It was wonderful for those of us that like watching your team and like watching you manage to see you sign that contract. This team is chasing all time in MLS terms. If you win a Champions Cup and go do more, I mean, we're talking about one of the best teams ever, long way to go there, could win, go to Club World Cup. There's a lot on your plate here, and I wonder what career-wise right now really motivates you. Like, where are you at as far as your own career and your own growth and how you're fueling that?
Listen, I am at peace with myself, and I am happy here, for sure. That's why I decided to accept the extension, I would say. After that, yes, I am limitless. You know, I like to challenge myself. It's been my life also since I've been young. So, yes, for sure, I don't know when, but the idea is to challenge myself. So don't forget that I come from Europe. So I'm not the type of coach that I am a desperate guy to go in Europe. No, because I could have been in Europe before, but I decided to stay here and to stay in the United States. So for me, when the project and the moments will come to go, I will do it for sure. So now the project here is perfect for me. My family is happy here. I cannot complain about money. So I am humble, and I'm enjoying myself every day. So, and also there is also what is important for me, and to be serious, is I can see the evolution. And for me, it's really important to see that, okay, I can get better, I can get better, I can get better. And when I'm going to feel that, okay, I achieve what I wanted to achieve. I'm not talking about win something. I'm talking about me as a human being and also as a coach. I will say everything that, okay, I'm done. I'm done. And if they don't fire me before, but for the moment, I'm okay with that.
That's the life of a coach, huh? Wilfred Nancy is limitless, except on the golf course.
Yeah.
Maybe Wilfred, except on the golf course. It's been a pleasure to chat with you. Good luck. Hell is Real this weekend. You can watch on MLS Season Pass, and we eagerly await that CONCACAF Champions Cup final. Thank you, Wilfred.
Thank you. Thank you.
Massive, massive thanks to Wilfred Nancy and the Columbus crew for making the time to chat with us. I hope you enjoyed that interview, as well as a long-needed chat with Kalen Carr. You can watch him this weekend, Montreal, Inter Miami. That is the big match because it's messy, but there are so many good ones as Rivalry Week start. Tune in, MLS Season Pass on Apple TV. And I leave you this before we go. May is ALS Awareness Month. That might not mean a single thing to you. I completely get it. There are so many awareness months. It's easy to scroll past or just think that's not affecting me. The most I knew about ALS this year was that Lou Gehrig had it and it was nerve-related. And then earlier this year, my dad was diagnosed. So I don't say this to ask you for sympathy. I don't say this for any other reason other than there's no cure for ALS, and it is an incredibly cruel disease. It takes away your ability to walk, to talk, to eat, to eventually breathe. It takes everything away from you, but your brain still is there, and it just can't do the things that it knows it used to be able to do. So I encourage you to learn more about ALS, to educate yourself about the symptoms. It took years, years of visits to doctors to get my dad properly diagnosed. So I hope that is not the case for any family in the future, but educate yourself. If you have the financial means and you feel so compelled, feel free to donate as well. We need money to help find a cure, to help caretakers and patients have the best possible life with the disease. So I encourage you in this month, the ALS Awareness Month, to go out and check that out. And if you play golf, beginning of June, I will be playing in the Josie McGuff Classic in Kansas City. It's a long-time charitable event to raise money for ALS. There are four spots remaining. It is a little bit pricey, but if you would like to play in that tournament, get in my DMs and let me know. It's a fundraiser for the event, and my dad's going to be honored. So I will be happy to play with you as a celebrity golfer in that event. Celebrity, of course, in quotation marks. With that, enjoy the weekend, everybody. We'll see you on Monday. Adios. We'll be right back.